Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. I'm joined today with Julie Fudge-Smith, a former trainer at All About Dogs. Now Julie lives in Ohio and has another company, and another current trainer at All About Dogs, Amy Tram, and I also am at All About Dogs. So that is a connection that we all share, but what we're going to talk about today is Amy's passion for flyball. She and her dog Mango have spent a lot of time doing flyball. So thanks so much for joining us, Amy.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, Amy, what exactly is flyball? Can you describe this sport to us?
Sure. So, flyball is a team sport. It consists of a relay race of two teams of four dogs and their owners. And what happens is there are four jumps. I don't exactly know the distances. Somebody who's far more crazy about flyball would know, like the team captain. So there's four jumps, and then there is a box, a specialized box that sits at the end of the flyball lane, and it holds a tennis ball or some kind of ball. They used to be tennis balls, but now there's all different sorts of balls that you can put in there. And it triggers, so the dog jumps on the box. It triggers the ball to fly out of the box. The dog gets the ball, and they run back towards the other side of the lane, and then the other dog passes the other dog, and the next dog goes down. So it's a relay race of four dogs. Once the last dog crosses the finish line, then they count the
time.
So let me just restate that and see if I can picture it right. So I'm in a lane and I've got my dog and I send my dog out over four jumps.
Yes.
He hits a box that shoots out a tennis ball or some other ball, grabs the ball, comes back over those four jumps to me, and then Julie's standing behind me ready to send her dog off.
Right. So kind of think about the tennis ball as a baton, sort of, except it's a tennis ball. And then you don't give the tennis ball to the next person. They just go back and they get a new tennis ball.
So each dog gets his own tennis ball?
Yes, they do. Yes.
Okay. All right.
And if they don't get the ball, what happens?
Then that's a fault and you don't end up completing that race, that heat.
Okay. Right. So how long does one of these heats take? I'm envisioning this is like 30 seconds.
It's super fast. So the fastest dogs probably at this point can probably complete, go down and come back under 4 seconds. Like, that's the super, super fastest dogs. So average probably between 4 to 6 seconds, I would say. So an average dog probably is about 5 to 6 seconds. So it's super fast. Teams in general are probably around between 25, 30 seconds. So it's really, really fast. Yeah.
Okay.
It's just crazy to imagine that much activity in 30 seconds, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's very loud. It's super, super loud.
Super loud.
Yes. Yeah. Why? Can you tell people why it's loud?
Because the dogs are barking. Normally, we do these activities, at least on the East Coast. On the West Coast, they do them outdoors. But on the East Coast, because of it's really cold in the winter, and then it's really hot in the summer, we do them inside, mostly like metal buildings. So if you think about, you get a whole bunch of dogs, and when we're racing, we usually have at least two rings going on. So if you think there's 16 dogs racing at any given time, and most of the time, almost all of them are barking, and then you have dogs that are waiting to race, and then dogs who just raced, and then there's dogs who are being crated inside the same buildings, some of whom are really excited that there are other dogs racing. Lots of dogs in a metal building with no kind of padding, so they're just all barking all the time.
And it's all day.
So you start at 8, you end generally around 5. Sometimes it lasts longer, so it goes from Saturday until Sunday. So yeah, you get used to a lot of barking.
Wow. That is a lot of barking. You don't wear earplugs? Because I'm
yeah,
thinking...
yeah. People do wear earplugs. I never actually ended up wearing earplugs, but a lot of people wear earplugs. They do.
Okay. That makes a certain
How
amount of sense to me.
How many times would your dog race in a day? So if you're there all day, does a dog do just one race or multiple races?
Yeah. You race a bunch. I don't, you lose track. You just kind of...
many times.
Captains would know better because they make a race schedule for you and you just go. Like you...
Yeah, it seems like if the races take 30 seconds and you're there from 8 to 5, there have to be a lot of races.
Yeah, there are a lot of races, yeah. And it just depends on how big the competitions are. So Eileen, who's another trainer at All About Dogs, she's been doing it for a lot longer than I have. There's a huge race in Indianapolis that also, it's called Can-Am, and it's huge because it also has Canadian teams that participate, and they have normally, like I said, there's two rings, so it's two sets of races, but there I think they have like eight rings. So
wow.
It's ginormous. I've never been because it's Mango is special, so we race very limited races, but Eileen's been to that competition, and that's just, I can't even imagine like the breadth of it and how many dogs, like how loud that would be, number one.
Yes.
But
well, Eileen has an advantage there because our trainer Eileen is deaf.
Yes.
she does wear hearing aids that help her, but she says she just turns them off. She's like, I don't need them there.
Yeah.
So
wow.
That would be one advantage for her there. So tell us, so how did you get into fly ball and what's fun about it for you?
Right. So, the team that I used to participate in doesn't exist anymore, but they used to practice in the same facility as All About Dogs when I used to be a client, and they did a demo one night at All About Dogs, and I think it might have been before, I think it would maybe have been after a class that I was at, and that was the first time I had ever seen fly ball, and it seemed to be super fun, and so Mango's a border collie, and as you guys probably know, and maybe some of your listeners know, border collies need jobs. And Mango's also a rowdy rover, so he particularly needed something to occupy his time with. And Eileen was on the team. So I don't think I got involved right away, but there might have been something that they had mentioned about wanting to get new team members. I don't even exactly remember, but I decided to go and show up one night, and I just kept on going to practices, and they were really open to having me participate. And it worked out really well for him since he is a rowdy rover and he needed something to do first off. But because of his focus, it worked really well for him that he was able to do something so fast that he could focus for that 5 to 6 seconds on something and not... didn't give him enough time to be distracted by other and I think it's really different from a lot of other kind of dog sports in that it's a team effort. I would say most dog sports are not so much, they're a team effort in that you work with you and your dog, but not that you work with other people and other dogs. Jilly's not really like that. Rallyo's not really like that.
Right.
You know, I don't really know of many other sports like that within the dog sporting world.
Right. I'm thinking that for our listeners, since we have not talked about rowdy rovers before, maybe we could just do a quick explanation about what we're talking about with what a rowdy rover is and why flyball would be a good thing for a rowdy rover.
Rowdy rover is the nice name I applied years ago to the class for reactive dogs. And I am a dog trainer because years and years and years ago, I had a rowdy rover that was too bad for dog class. So we got kicked out of multiple classes. So at All About Dogs, we have had reactive dog classes forever because it's so important to me. And Amy and her Mango were in that class, and Mango is an extraordinary dog, but he needs environment to be set up well for him. So it was really good that Amy and Mango were able to do flyball. Not every rowdy rover would excel in flyball.
Right.
Part of the drive that Mango has and the intensity for the ball and all of that made it that he could succeed. But it's not, you know, a standard practice where I would say to a ratty rover owner, fly ball, great sport for your dog.
Right. Definitely,
it's a case by case.
Right. Yeah. I can remember when we did, because I was thinking about that when I used to teach ratty rovers with you, Colleen. And some of the ratty rovers I was thinking back on, I'm not sure I would want to put them in a situation with a whole bunch of other barking dogs, that might actually be not a good thing. So bravo for Mango that was something that he could do with a certain aplomb. I also have a question for you as far as when you practice fly ball, how do you teach your dog to do this? How do you teach him to, like, hit the box and go over the jumps in the right order?
Right. So it takes a really long time, and it varies with dogs. With Mango, doing the jumps was not difficult. So even within our regular All About Dogs classes, for him, it was really natural to do the jumps. Even when we do our regular All About Dogs classes, sometimes I'll break out just a few jumps in our more advanced, in our level 3 and 4 classes, just to have dogs when we do something a little bit more fun. And I'm always amazed at how some dogs are, like, terrified. They have no idea what they're doing with these jumps, just because they're not naturally athletic dogs. So for that, we do work with the dogs, just luring them and trying to get, we put the jumps really, really low. And we get them to jump, we jump with them over the jumps. So that's a first step. The box is probably the most difficult thing. There's also dogs that have no ball drive whatsoever. So a lot of times when we encourage people to do fly balls, because we see dogs that have lots and lots of ball drive. We had 2 dogs on the team, and I don't know if they're still racing. They were little dogs. They were a Jack Russell and a Cairn Terrier, and I think probably they had more. They were already on the team when I joined the team, and I didn't see this process, but I heard stories. They had no ball drive whatsoever, particularly the Cairn Terrier, who was always kind of a dopey little dog. They spent, I think, probably a year just trying to get them to want to carry a ball in their mouth, and they soaked the ball in all sorts of things to make them care that there was a ball. They just didn't care about balls at all. So, but their owners were just really determined to want to do fly ball. I mean, for most people, they would have been like, okay, they don't want a ball, I'm not going to put any effort into it. So, you know, that's a huge step. Even Eileen, her dog now Ricky, had a little bit of issues with balls. He wasn't that crazy about balls, and he would spit out a ball a lot of times when he was coming back from the box. So there's a lot of different little issues that dogs deal with. In terms of hitting the box, there's also a lot of stuff associated with that, because the boxes sometimes make a lot of noise, and if dogs are noise sensitive, that can be really scary. They have to get used to the fact that when they hit this thing, this ball's coming straight at their face. You know, like, none of it is natural. A lot of how we teach dogs in the world are not natural at all, particularly hitting a weirdly shaped box that holds a ball that shoots a thing at their face is not natural. So we break it up, just like with anything else that we teach dogs, we break it up in teeny tiny steps. We use luring a whole lot. We use whatever it is that motivates them. A lot of people use food for Mango, his motivator, I think, early on. And even still, when we would finish a race, was another ball. So you just have to break things up into tiny steps. And, you know, the trainers, especially for my team, was really great. And she was also really great because she was willing to work with a reactive dog. And my team was great in that anytime we practiced, we would clear out the entire building and we would only have Mango practicing. So I'm sure there are teams that aren't willing to do that. And also teams are super competitive and all they want to do is win. And we didn't have a team like that. We were more concerned about having fun. We had a few competitive teams on our team. But we had other teams that were just there to have fun. So it's just like with any other dog training. You just have to break it up into teeny tiny steps and, you know, work with dogs at whatever stage they're at and be accepting of some people are going to be really great at it and some dogs are not going to be great at it. And if people want to do it just to have fun, then let them do it because they want to have fun. So it's whatever effort the owners and their dogs, if the dogs look like they're having fun, want to put into it. If the dogs don't want to do it, then the owners have to be willing to accept it and go, okay, well, they're not going to do it. We had people who had one dog who was really great at another dog who wasn't that great at it. And they were just like, okay, well, Dixie's not going to do it anymore. We'll just give up on Dixie. She's fine just being a regular dog. So I'm not going to stress out about it.
I always like that when people say that. Like, when you sort of accept, like, this dog, could I train the dog to do it? Yeah, probably. Will he love it? No. So, okay, not going to do it.
Yeah.
And there are so many different activities you can do with the dog. There's no need to, you know, try to make a dog do something that isn't their sport, because that's the idea. It's a game. This is supposed to be fun.
Exactly.
For everyone.
So how long did it take you from when you began training to actually go to a trial? How long can, if somebody's interested in doing this, what kind of a time frame in general would they be looking at between beginning training and going to a trial?
Of course, it all depends. For me, it took probably a year and a half, you know, for me, it was also special because Mango is reactive. So we introduced dogs really gradually. And like every single step was like a huge victory. Like, oh my gosh, he actually passed one dog. And we had to pick very specific dogs that we knew would work with him. And then even when we went to tournaments, the dogs that we put on his team, we had to pick very specific dogs that we knew would work well with him. And we always raced the same you know, lineup with him. And he could only race as the first dog because we knew that we needed to get him in and out as fast as we could and not have him race at the end. Like I said, it all depends. Your dog is super good at, loves a ball, and, you know, they're super athletic and they pick up on things really quick, then they might take a lot less. If they end up having issues spinning the ball, they might backtrack. So I would say probably a year is probably a good indication. And how often your team practices. We ended up, when I started, practicing every weekend. And then because it was difficult to get a training facility, it's not that easy to find a place that's long enough to put the lanes out. Because it's actually fairly long, the amount of space that you need to practice. To rent the facilities takes a while to find, and oftentimes they're a lot farther out than most people live. So trying to find that time and that space for everybody. But I would say probably a year is a good
time. So what do you think was the best thing for you about your relationship with Mango from doing fly ball?
I think with anything that we've ever done in terms of training, it's always helped to strengthen our relationship. And especially like when you think about the amount of people and dogs in that building, even though it's only 6 seconds that he's away from me, especially being that he's reactive. And I think for any dog, the fact that your dog is away from you, and I said, you know, I don't know what the exact distance is that he has to be all the way at the end of the lane to get to the fly ball box. That's 6 seconds. He's completely away from me, where there's, I don't know how many dogs there are in that building. I don't know how many people there are in that building. He could decide at any moment to go, I don't care. I'm going to chase that after that dog. I'm going to chase after that person. That other person's eating a hot dog. That other person's doing whatever. I'm not going to listen to whatever is happening. I'm just going to leave. But he never did. He never did. He had one instance, but that was more towards my end. But he always came back to me. So, you know, that spoke to how strong of a bond you have to have with your dog that they have to come back to you.
Yeah.
And there were maybe two or three incidences, because there are times when the dogs in other lanes cross into your lane, because like if they lose a ball, like, you know, their owner throws them a ball as their reward and the ball bounces off their nose, they scramble to try to get that ball and they'll cross into your lane. And there are a few incidents where that happened, and Mango would just like look at me in complete confusion, and all I could do was scream, Mango! And he would just look at me and he would just look at me for what he was supposed to do, and all I could do was grab him. So I was super thankful that that was the first thing he would do, was look to me. And I think if I hadn't had all these, you know, took him to All About Dogs for training like twice a week, and done fly ball for all as well, you know, we were doing things 3 to 4 times a week for years and years and years. Like things like when we happen to have really crazy situations like that, like he wouldn't have reacted in that way. You know, his first reaction would have been, okay, I'm going to try and turn around and bite that dog. And there were times, not that often, but there were times where dogs did react that way. Because it's scary. It's, you don't have control, and it's a really crazy atmosphere. So I think that definitely helped to benefit our relationship. It just made us a lot stronger.
So in terms of, like, things that people could do at home that aren't fly ball but have fly ball-like skills or activity, what kinds of things could somebody do just to practice fun games that might build toward fly ball skills?
So I think once when Eileen and I were teaching together, we tried to do a fly ball-esque class. We might have tried to bring a box, but that was going to be too much. But we just put, like, balls on a chair at the end of a one side of the classroom. And I think we might have just had people have their dogs run to one side of the class. And we might have put all the barriers in rows, so it kind of simulated a lane. But at home, like, you can just have a ball on a chair or something, or even on the floor, and just practice seeing if your dog will run and get a ball and bring it back to you. You know, so that's basically fetch for a lot of people. But having a ball be in a stationary place, most people don't have the ability to have a fly ball box because it's a really specialized piece of equipment and it's really expensive. Or you can set up jumps, like putting jumps in a row. In agility, they're not exactly like that. They're kind of all over the place. So you can make your own agility jumps. I've talked about that in the past in classes. You can have a room just on top of some cans of soup or whatever. It's really easy to do. Just put some tape on there to make it a little bit more stable. Start out with it really low. And in terms of fly ball, they're all in one row. So having your dog jump consecutively from one jump to the next, and then just putting a ball on the ground and seeing if they can do that. So those are some really simple, easy things. It helps. It's a little bit harder when you're outside. So a lot of the dogs in fly ball learn to stay in a lane because we have matting that really clearly delineates what a lane is. So maybe trying it on a sidewalk if you can do it on a sidewalk, or doing it somehow outside where you can put something else outside to clearly delineate a lane. I'm not sure. But, you know, just putting jumps in a row, that's an easy thing. Maybe if you're going to try to do a ball, you can have somebody hold a ball on one side, like on one side of the yard, and, you know, calling the dog from the other side of the yard. You know, it's also a good way to practice a recall, getting your dog to come back to you.
So when they do them outside, when they do the trials outside, how do we know the ground is level? You know, are they doing them on athletic fields, or are they doing it just in a field and you hope that the ground is pretty level for the dog? Or
I would assume so. I'm not sure. Like,
I'm asking you advanced questions. Yeah. I'm asking you West Coast questions.
Out in California, Denver, I don't know. Maybe it's just much, I don't know.
Maybe one of our listeners will tell us.
Well, that would be good. They could call us in and let us know if they do fly ball. What are the Western rules? So I think that when you were talking about that, the key difference between playing fetch and playing fly ball is with fetch, you're throwing the ball and the dog is chasing a moving object. Whereas with fly ball, if you want to start working that way, the dog has to see a stationary object and choose to go get it and bring it back, which for my dog, who's nearsighted, would just not, certainly, we're not doing fly ball anytime soon because she can't see it if it's not moving. So that's a really key difference. So I find that really interesting. And the idea of setting it up on a chair, I think, is a really great idea because it makes it different than just sitting in the grass. So you're having a dog interact with an object, the ball, as well as an object that it's sitting on, which would be a way to get started towards taking a ball out of a fly ball box that it has to come off of a particular object. So that's really interesting. Where can people learn more about fly ball? Is there a fly ball association?
There are a couple of organizations that do fly ball, and it's been a while, so I'm going to have to look them up. So there are two main fly ball organizations that I know of that do fly ball. So we competed in NAFA, which is the North American Fly Ball Association. That's where our team competed. And then there was one more, which I can't remember, but NAFA is the bigger one as far as I can remember. So people can look that one up. And their website is just flyball.org. So that's probably a good resource.
That in the show notes.
One of the things I'd like to go back to a little bit is sort of from the dog's perspective. If you're looking at your dog and you want to do a sport, what traits do you think are most important for you to consider in a dog that might be good for fly ball?
That's a good question. If your dog is super noise sensitive and you don't think they'll be able, and you're not going to be able to work with them or work through it with them, and you're not, you just don't have the time or effort or any of that, it's not at all a sport for them, because there's noise everywhere. Everything's going to scare them. Having ball drive really helps initially, because it'll take a lot of that work out. But the owners on our team who spend all that time getting their dog to like the ball are pretty extraordinary. Most people are not going to spend a year soaking tennis balls in beef broth. And, you know, that's just, most people aren't going to spend that much effort doing it. It's a lot easier if you have 10 tennis balls around your house because your dog cannot get enough of them. A dog who has drive really, really helps. A dog who's naturally athletic really helps. Not that all dogs were, you know, not that if your dog isn't naturally athletic, not that that doesn't happen. There tends to be, all types of dogs do fly ball, but there tend to be certain breeds that do it more often. Border collies are super popular. Any of the herding breeds in general do fly ball. You know, it's kind of obvious. They have strong drive, they need a job, they're really focused. There were, like, sometimes there were really random breeds that you would see sometimes. Trying to think, there was like a French bulldog once.
A French bulldog. I find that interesting.
So is it like agility where they would have the fast dogs are in these heats and then the slower dogs are in those heats? So you would have other dogs to compete with if your team included a Mastiff. Odds are you're not going to be done in 18 seconds, like the poor Border Collie team.
There are different types of kinds of races you could do. So there was like one type where all the dogs had to be the same breed. There was one where all the dogs had to be separate. So when I say all the dogs, like everybody on a team. So all the four dogs had to be, were they supposed to be the same breed? So all the dogs, so there was one type where all the dogs had to be different. So you couldn't have like two border collies on a team. They had to be like a border collie and a corgi and a mixed dog. So you could have one mixed dog. So you could have one, you couldn't have two, you know, mutts. You had to be one something. And then one team where they could be whatever, it didn't matter. You could have a mix of whatever. So generally, the ones that race the fastest times were the ones where you could have a mix of whatever. And it started happening that the really super, super, super competitive teams were teams that were starting to mix, starting to breed dogs just for fly ball. And they were...
What were they mixing? Border collie and what?
Like staffies, border staffies.
Okay. There you'd have a lot of drive.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They were really like compact, really fast little things. Like really, really just
interesting.
Now, aren't the jumps set for the height for the lowest dog on the team?
Yes. Yeah. So that's also why they were doing border staffies, because then they were getting smaller dogs. Whereas if you did border collies, they weren't always the shortest dogs. But there were teams that had really fast border collies. Mango was never the fastest border collie. So, and then in other teams, you generally wouldn't put all your slowest dogs in one team. You would try to mix it up. So you might have some slow dogs and you might have some fast dogs. And you always would try to get a little dog in there so that you could have short jumps. But sometimes there were teams that all had big dogs and you would have like super high jumps just because you couldn't get any short dogs on there. But then it always depended on what kind of team you had. Like there were some teams that were super crazy competitive and they would always have all fast teams. And our team was never like that. We had like one really competitive team, but in general, we were mostly there to have fun. And, you know, so that's also why I liked our team. And, you know, I think it just depends on where you live and who you team up with. So what your purpose and competing is.
So if you're interested in flyball and you find a team and they're hyper competitive and you're not, don't give up. There are other teams out there. Look around. So everybody can start the sport at their own pace.
Yes.
Well, is there anything else that you think you should tell us about flyball? Anything that we missed? I feel like we kind of covered it.
So I think it's become more popular. So hopefully if you're interested in it, there are classes that you can possibly take, like beginner classes. So definitely look for those opportunities. And if you end up liking it, definitely pursue it. If it's not your cup of tea, there's a lot of other dog sports out there. And I think also that's
absolutely
in general dog sports, there's a lot more different types of stuff you can take now than there were. I mean, when I started, which wasn't crazy long time ago, but when I started, it was kind of, you could do agility or you could do flyball, and that was really all I knew of. And I'm really glad I found flyball, agility. We did try agility. It wasn't quite, didn't really work for us. There was just too much downtime in between each obstacle for Mango to get distracted by. Well, it worked really well because it was so fast, and he'd come right back to me, and I could keep him occupied until the next race, till the next heat started. But I think that's the nice thing, is that there's a lot of options out there now for people. And there's just a lot of more things that you can do with your dog.
And the things that we can do just in our living room, because that's the question I always ask all our dog sport people. I'm like, well, what can we do at home for those of us who aren't going to go do that? What are the little things? Because I think the whole goal is just do something fun with your dog. It doesn't have to be too major. Amy gave us this amazing picture of Mango in full flyball form. That's going to be the photo for our episode. So you all get to see Mango. It's a really good picture. So thank you for sharing that.
The one thing I just want to add, too, is it's interesting because I gave a presentation this morning and I was talking about dog sports. And one of the things that I think is always important for us to reiterate, these are all positively reinforced training. You cannot shock a dog or choke a dog into having fun on flyball. All these things are all positive reinforcement. And for the dog, one of the big rewards is getting that ball and running back to you. And so I think that's one of the beauties of all these sports that are coming up, is that these are all great ways for you to positively interact with your dog and to really build your relationship. And it all goes back to the idea that, a reward-based system is going to give your dog the motivation to try something new, and that always makes it a lot more fun.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's one of the best things about that was one of the most fun things about doing flyball, because really, like, the people do it and go to tournaments to win all these ridiculous ribbons, because we want these dumb ribbons and these dumb titles. The dog doesn't care if they're a flyball dog excellent or gold or whatever. It's really for us. But you can see, like, Mango would get so excited as soon as we got into a building, and all the barking is because the dogs get so excited. And for daughter dogs, for Mango, you always choose a reward for the dog once they come back. Like, yay, you came back. You came back and you gave me a ball. For a lot of dogs, it's food. For Mango and for other dogs, it was just a whole nother ball. Like, drop the ball.
Give me this tennis ball. Get that one.
Yay.
Yeah, what kind of reward is that? Like, most people, that would not be a reward whatsoever. Like, you just finished your homework. Look, you got another pencil. Oh, yay. That's not, like, for a dog, it was so exciting. Like, I just came back and you're going to give me another ball. Yay! So for them, it's so funny to see how, sometimes I just wish I was a dog to know how much happiness that could be.
Right.
Have we ever experienced happiness on that level? Mm-hmm. It'd be amazing to know what that feels like.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's amazing to witness it and really be in that moment. To watch your dog go, oh my gosh, another tennis ball. And to really just take that in and go, that's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you, Amy, very much. That was really informative. I hope our listeners have learned something and will do something to enact with their dog some fun training. It seems to me, too, it's a great way for a dog to expend energy, which we're always looking for, too. So,
yes.
Thank you very much for joining us. Colleen, do you have anything else that you'd like to add or wrap up?
No, just thanks for joining us, Amy.
And I'll see you next week, Colleen. Thanks again, Amy.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
Hey, if you enjoyed the show, could you do us a quick favor? Head over to iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. That will help other families find quick and easy tips for enjoying life with their dogs. Thanks!